We're about to welcome Adam Pengilly. Before we do, one thing I don't think I've done enough this morning. I pinch it on this show, Loz.
Yeah.
Jared hosts, and you guys have your usual sticks, and I'm sure he does pick your brain on certain topics. But because I do have hit-and-run missions, it means I can egg you on maybe more than he's allowed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel like you've given us your full, honest opinion when it comes to the obstruction ruling in the Manly game the other day. And we've seen texts coming through. They're saying, stop sitting on the fence, Loz. What are you up to? Give us an opinion.
Well, I'm not sitting on the fence because I've said that the rule is correct. That's how they've adjudicated.
Correctly applied. You're happy with the decision.
Well, no, I'm not, because I don't think there was common sense applied. But
not so common.
But what we've seen adjudicated all year has been, if you run and you stop in the line and a defender is impeded, you're in all sorts if someone goes through that space that you were intending to get to. Now, he dropped off yesterday, Moretti, I thought, for sure. He was never going to stop Tom Trbojevic. But, unfortunately, the fact that Jake was in the road and he denied him the opportunity to close down that space and Tom went through that space, it was always going to be pulled back.
But this is why our listeners are saying you're sitting on the fence. You're saying the rule is there, black and white, clear as day, correctly applied.
Yeah.
But then you're saying, where was the common sense?
Well, that's the rule. That's the rule, so you're not going to change it. So we can sit here
and
argue. Well, yeah, but then what you'll do, you'll go back to the common sense rule applies, and we won't have people thinking the same way because there'll be too much grey.
God forbid this concept. But if it was a little greyer, the rule, and you allowed referees to read the game, to have a feel for the game, to say,
well, the best referees always have a feel for the game. Yep. The best referees always have a feel for the game. You know why we get good State of Origin games and good grand finals? You know what happens? They put the whistle away. And they will argue that the best players adhere to the rules better. But I think in those big games, you're not being as nitpicking as what you do in a regular club game.
True, but if it got sent to the bunker...
But that happened in an Origin or a grand final, they would rule the same way.
If it got sent to the bunker.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Most definitely. If it didn't get sent to the bunker, but every try is now looked at.
But my concern is that you shouldn't have obstruction if no one's disadvantaged. So somewhere we've got a
problem. Well, he was disadvantaged.
No, he wasn't.
Well, they're
he was disadvantaged with the way that the rule is written.
Yes, correct.
He stopped in the line.
That's what they're saying.
Yeah, he stopped in
the
line.
You're not allowed to stop in the line. If you stop in the line and you don't make contact with someone coming across, it's play on.
Yes.
But as soon as the defender makes contact with the attacking player who stops in the line,
so the ball
tickets are off.
I appreciate that, but there was no disadvantage because he was never going to chase.
But
he was never going
to.
That's the common sense what we're asking for that isn't so common. Because the black and white rule is, did he stop in the line?
Once you stop in the
line,
you're gone.
Did he impede the defender? Yes, he did. Even though I think everyone believes
he was never going to tackle.
He wasn't going to get there whether Jake was there or not.
Well, it's going to be an arm tackle. That's what it would have been.
It promotes staging.
If he touched him.
Yeah.
He was cooked. He was fatigued. He was out on his feet. Jake saved him falling over, if anything.
But people are being critical of him. It promotes staging. This rule promotes staging.
Yeah, of course. But that's what every player does now. They know players are not dumb. They know the rule. You see, as soon as he touches Jake and they score, his hands are in the air straight away.
If you're an edge defender, either four in or three in, and they run a block shape run, which is a lead runner and someone swinging out the back, and you get you make a misread, all of a sudden you're trying to establish yourself to make contact with that lead runner on his inside shoulder and look as though you're trying to get across.
And definitely fall over if you can.
Most definitely. So it's been there for a number of years now. So we all know that at certain stages, players play for it.
Mate, smart play as the defender. Like, smart play. The defender knows in that situation he's not going to be able to make the tackle. So what's my plan B? Mate, definitely take a penalty.
Yep.
Adam, I thought I'd just wind him up a little bit before you joined us. It's great to have you on the show, as always. I mean, we'll go through a few discussion points, not just in rugby league, but in racing as well. But quickly, your take on it.
Morning, Ben. Morning, boys. I 100% concur with Loz. To the letter of the law, they adjudicated that right, but I do not agree with the decision. And it just comes back to the game of rugby league. We want it to be black and white. Sometimes there are shades of grey. There is no way in hell that Luca Moretti is making that tackle on Tom Trbojevic there yesterday. He was never, ever going to get there. But as the rule stands, the bunker probably made the decision they thought was correct. But as fans, it's hard to comprehend, isn't it? Because you get so disillusioned. Like, if you're not in a position to make the tackle, then I think the obstruction rule should be taken off the table, right? You have to be in some sort of position to make the tackle.
100%.
He was not in a position to make the tackle there yesterday. So, yeah, I thought it had a pretty significant bearing on the game. I don't want to take anything away from Parramatta, because I thought they were great yesterday. But you can certainly say that decision probably changed the course of the game in the second half there.
Hey, I probably wouldn't normally have started there, Adam, because you had quite the performance on the weekend. Now, I don't know if you're aware, but earlier on this morning, Loz took all credit for the multi. Not 10%, not 20, not 80, not 99. All credit for the multi. So just talk me through how it played out and what role Loz played in your selections for the multi.
Well, first of all, Loz, how was golf on Friday? Because when you should have been coming and pitching up the multi, we heard you're on the golf course.
Yeah, I was on the golf course.
I
actually hit them all right. It was, you guys know the name, Ambrose, where you play a shot each, and yeah, our team
play the best
really
ball.
Well. Yeah, yeah. So I was up there at the Hunter Valley, Westpac helicopter rescue, fundraiser for them. Really good day, but no, we hit them well. Bit of rain around though, in the morning though. Bit of rain around, so it affected the swing at times.
Well,
couldn't get the right grip. I chipped and putted all right.
Oh dear.
I was gonna say, Loz, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much were you death riding that multi on Saturday?
No, I didn't death ride it at all, because there's no I in team, and I support the people on this panel. And when I spoke to Middo on Friday, and I said, mate, or Thursday night, I should say, and I said, mate, you've got to put this horse in to run a top four. It's a special. He agreed with me. So I didn't know what you were putting in the multi, but then I saw the $10 and I thought, this thing's just going to bolt in.
Adam, I'm not here too often, so I can tell the truth. He word for word said earlier, I was death riding that multi all weekend. Word for word. And just on that front, were you critical of Middo in terms of the Gambare push?
No, not at all. Not at all. I thought
positive.
He did his form, and he found a horse who was going to settle on speed in a race where there wasn't a whole lot of speed, and probably looking for 2,000 metres, Gambare. I've got to say, Benny, I have never more eagerly anticipated or watched a photo finish for fourth in my life than what I did on Saturday. Halfway down the straight, I thought, he's going to run fifth here. And then he just found enough to lift himself over the line to run fourth in the photo. So, yeah, Middo and I exchanged a few text messages on Saturday afternoon. We were quite chuffed for the listeners to get a multi home.
But he talked to me about the Titans. They lose Tino now for the season. Loz reckons they're favourites now for the Wooden Spoon.
Oh, they have to be, Clarky, don't they? Surely. He is such an important player to them, and to lose him for the rest of the year, not only just the Titans, but for Queensland.
Well, do you reckon it affects... Loz said that this morning. He thinks that'll have massive effect on Queensland.
Oh, huge, Clarky. He's the type of guy who's probably going to play 55, 60 minutes in an Origin game, just getting through so much work in the middle of the park. He's almost their standover man and enforcer as well. And to lose him for the entire Origin series is going to be a massive blow for the Maroons. Having said that, I know we're still a long way out from the Origin series. We've got some concerns ourselves with Payne Arce out for the next 4 to 6 weeks. So he's going to be a bit short of a gallop in the weeks leading up to Origin selection too. So, yeah, I don't know where the Titans go, Clarky. They've been the most disappointing team, well, apart from Souths, obviously, hands down in the first few rounds of the season. Again, another pretty insipid performance there at Belmore against the Bulldogs. Deji's got a lot of work in store for him. He's got his work cut out. I know they need to get Jaden Campbell and David Fafita back in the action, but I just don't know if this halves combination, Loz, is working with Tanner Boyd. They had another pretty torrid afternoon there at Belmore on the weekend, and they look like they're really lacking a couple of players in some really key positions.
Yeah, no, I think you're right there. They were massive disappointments on the weekend, and as you said, losing Tino will affect not only the Titans, but Queensland. And when you look at Queensland, some of the players have already lost for the season. With Tom Gilbert out, Tino, they would have been two players that Billy would have had in his ideal 17. So there's two players that have got to replace straight away. There's some doubt on Joe Arrow as well with his shoulder. So they're starting to lose troops. But getting back to the Titans, yeah, I expected a lot more. And I expected a bit of resilience with their defence. But the opening two games, they've leaked points. Mm. And for me, that's the concerning thing. Their inability to score, but also the inability to stop other teams scoring. So that is a worry going forward. And they've got a tough game against the Dolphins this weekend. But flip side of the coin, the Bulldogs. I thought they were impressive. I thought they were very, very good. And that was off the back of two games where they were competing and trying really hard. But I think that was the victory that they needed to give them confidence.
You can just start to see they're building an identity, can't you, Lewis? Like with what Cameron Serrato's doing. And I know some people were a little bit disappointed with their first two performances against Parramatta and the Sharks, but I think you could tell that their defence had really sharpened up over the course of the off-season. He'd been working on that overtime. They were entitled to concede a lot more points against Parramatta and the Sharks than what they did in those two games, given the possession and the flow of those matches. So I thought they did well to keep both teams to the 20s. And then you saw there on the weekend, once they had a bit of momentum, they were a really hard team to stop. And I kept going back to that left side. Like, if you got that left side with Burton, Kickout, Crichton, Humming on that left side, they're going to pose some teams some problems. And I'll tell you what, I'm looking forward to this game on Good Friday, Loz. I know it's only Monday at the moment, but South under enormous pressure at the moment, playing against a Bulldogs team who's just starting to find their groove with a little bit of confidence after a good win on the weekend. I reckon it's going to be an absolute cracker at Accor Stadium on Friday.
What's been the wash-up since that game on Friday? Obviously, there's talk about the coach, Jason Demetriou. Is this speculation, or is there some truth to the fact that we're now starting to see stories come out about he's got the next three games, and if he doesn't win at least one of those games, then he could be out of a job.
Yeah, they've got three games coming up against the Lodz, against the Bulldogs, the Sharks and the Warriors in the next 3 weeks, and they've got a bye. So you'd imagine after six rounds, they'll probably take stock with a week off, with a bye, and have a look at things and see how things are progressing. Like, no doubt, there's enormous pressure on him at the moment, just given the way they finished last year and their really poor start to the season. I don't know if you guys caught his press conference on Friday night after the game. I thought he spoke really well with a lot of clarity. And he said, it's on me to turn it around. I'm confident we can do it. But he also was happy to show some vulnerability and say, this is probably the lowest point of my career right now at the moment. But he's got a side with a lot of experienced players. They just need to find something, Loz. I just thought that once the Roosters got on a bit of a roll there on Friday night, there's not enough resilience to turn the game around. Like, I just don't know who they're turning to dig them out of a hole. Poor Cam Murray. You can see he's trying his absolute backside off in the middle of the park. I don't know what you think, but I sometimes worry about his longevity in the game, Loz. The amount of work he gets through. And he's not a big guy. He's not a huge guy. Mm. And you can just see it's taking a toll on him at the moment.
Yeah, I do, but then I had the same concerns about Jake Trbojevic at certain stages throughout his career, thinking, geez, this bloke just gets through too much work, plays 80 minutes, and he's going to wear himself out. But
and Origin, we reckon he was underplayed.
Yeah, but he sort of found a way to keep going. So I think some of our athletes are remarkable in terms of the way, even if they're battered and bruised, they just find a way to keep going.
Yeah.
But that's something that Cam and South will have to manage going forward. But that's where I think it all starts from South. You can point the finger at a lot of people, but I think it starts in their engine room. I think that's where they have to be better. They've got to be tighter around the middle. They've got to be more aggressive with their line speed. They've got to be better connection in defence, but just be more direct in terms of hitting their targets and stopping the opposition carrying the ball and getting momentum. Otherwise, if the ruck gets blown apart, you get found out in all places. And then when you're getting the ball, you're getting it back on your line, you're fatigued. And it's never been South's strength, their back five, carrying the ball out of trouble. It's never been their strength.
No. And I don't know what you thought, Loz. I thought the move to have Cookie start from the bench didn't work at all on Friday night. No. They were on the back foot from the opening minutes, and by the time he got into the game, I think they were down 12-0 already. And I was out there at Allianz Stadium a little bit early before the main game and saw Lachlan Ilias play in New South Wales Cup. He just looks a class above that level, New South Wales Cup on Friday night. So whether Jason Demetriou makes the call to, I suppose, swallow his pride a little bit and have Ilias back in the NRL squad at the expense of Dean Hawkins after just one game, I don't know if that's the answer or not, but clearly he just looked a little bit too good for New South Wales Cup on the weekend.
What about the Tigers, mate? Well, more important, look, Tigers obviously could win, but what about the Sharks? Where do you see them?
Yeah, they were a little bit disappointing on Saturday night, Clarkie, there with the Sharks, and they've got some serious injury concerns coming out of that game. Toby Rudolph has suffered a syndesmosis injury. I'm not quite sure if he's going to need surgery. The word last night was that he might be able to heal without surgery, but he's going to be looking at least probably 4 to 6 weeks out. So that's a pretty significant blow for them in the engine room. Dale Finucane copped that pretty nasty head gash, which I'd imagine he might be on, might be in some sort of doubt for their clash this week. And obviously, did you guys see Royce Hunt be ruled out of the game after injuring himself in the warm-up? He didn't even get on the field.
I didn't see the game, but it was... He was on the bench, wasn't he? And then warmed up. Yeah.
Yep.
And they weren't able to activate their 18th man, were they?
No. Because he hurt himself in the warm-up up and down the sideline after the game had already started.
Should that be something we need to look at as well?
Well, maybe. I don't know, Loz. But how often does it happen, really? Let's be honest. Like, it's quite strange to have something like that happen. I just thought the Tigers just out-enthused the Sharks there on Saturday night. They were a little bit hungrier. They were great around the middle. And Appy Corris there. Look, he is a fantastic player, Loz. His deception and that one pass he delivered, I think it was the Safehearts try, which is phenomenal. He's looking out the back to... He's got his halves in the back line and just completely bamboozled the Sharks defenders with his eyes. He is a magnificent player. So, good signs for Benji, good signs for the Tigers. I was happy for their fans because they deserve a bit of success and they've got to keep it going now.
You won't be surprised to hear that Lance from Point Frederick says hello with a bit of... His favourite thing this morning is morning Pingilly. So good to have you listening, Lance. And he's a big, big fan. Golden Slipper went to Lady of Camelot. Via Sestina was fantastic in the Rambit and now looks favourite for one of our richest races here in Sydney across the autumn. Riff Rocket in the Guineas. What a day's racing we had.
Fantastic, Ben. Magnificent days racing at Rose Hill Gardens. I love the five group ones. Well, first of all, just on the Golden Slipper, I think most people thought Gay and Adrian probably win the Golden Slipper, maybe not with Lady of Camelot. And you could just see with Storm Boy, he just made a bit of a mess at the start. And once you draw those inside gates and you want to settle on speed and you're not quick away, it just opens up a whole myriad of problems if horses cross you. And once that happens, he was never going to be in the correct spot or the spot he wanted to be in to try and win that race. But great ride by Blake Shin. I know that Lady of Camelot was held up for a little bit in the straight there. And if you're watching here thinking, oh, geez, I don't know if she's going to get out here, but... Once she did, she exploded. And that form coming through the Blue Diamond this year seemed to be the A-plus form. I know Hayasugi, the filly that won that race, finished tailed off last there. But some of the other horses behind her ran really well in Lady of Camelot and Coleman. Just quickly on Via Sestina, Ben. How often do we see it? Like, the horses that come from Europe over 2,000 metres plus, they just have panels on our local horses. Like, there's no other way to describe it. And I think they bet $3.80 about her on Saturday morning. She trimmed up significantly to start favourite there by the time they got to jump time. And there was a lot of smart punters knew what they were doing there. She is just a class above with that Group 1 European form. Can't wait to see her go around in Queen Elizabeth Stakes because she's going to be a serious, serious horse and extremely hard to beat.
No, I think the majority of the live chances in that race will have been born overseas. That appears to be the case on paper anyway. Imperatrix in the William Reid. We won't go into great detail, mate, because I need to let you go. But I reckon she's just a length or two below her best, but still good enough to beat up that lot in the William Reid.
Completely agree. I don't think she's quite at her absolute best this preparation, but Moonee Valley's her sweet spot, isn't it? Like, once she gets to those Group 1 races, they probably don't have the depth into the fields at Moonee Valley. She's always going to be extremely hard to beat. But what about the horse, Ben, just quickly, that ran runner-up, Johnny Rocker?
Oh, $10 a place.
He came out of a benchmark 78 last start. If it was a handicap race, Imperatriz would have been giving him 22 kilos. 22 kilos on his rating, and he's ran it to less than a length. That's a phenomenal performance by that horse, but I don't want to take anything away from Imperatriz. 10 Group 1 wins. What a phenomenal horse.
It is actually the second horse that makes me really question how good she's going. But that said, you're right. There was actually a gap back to third. It was an enormous run from Johnny. Enjoy the week. I'm sure the team will chat to you throughout the course of it. But what a day it was on Saturday. Good to have you on.
Hey, boys.